Today, property investors and property renters both being crushed. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, on the latest post covering finance and property news. Now, this show today is picking up on my earlier show on Tuesday, where I went through the household finances and specifically discussed the mapping of financial pressure from our surveys. Now, I didn't have time during that show to dive into the specifics of the investor segment, simply because there wasn't time. So today, I want to look at what's going on with property investors from a net and gross yield perspective. And in fact, there is a context for this discussion because we've now got the SQM data just out, actually. And Louis Christopher does a great job here. The national vacancy rate fell again to 1.1%. And the national asking rents were up 6.6% over the last 12 months. And he's suggesting that there is some very important trending going on here. Here is the data. And you can see that most of the country is looking at vacancy rates, well, including some below 1%. And the average nationally is 1.1%. Highlight particularly Adelaide and Brisbane and Perth, as well as Hobart, are way, way, way down, whilst the vacancy rate in Melbourne is a little higher, and Sydney is at 1.3%. Now, Louis Christopher, the managing director, said, "The national vacancy rate falling to 1.1% shows that the rental market remains very tight across most of the country. While some seasonal tightening is expected at this time of year, demand for rental housing is clearly continuing to outstrip supply, and so this move goes beyond normal seasonality. With advertised rents continuing to accelerate higher, the data suggests tenants are still facing strong competition for available properties without a meaningful lift in new housing supply and an easing in demand. Rental pressures are likely to remain a feature of the market through much of 2026, which may feed into the CPI." And in fact, Shane Oliver picked that up and underscored it. "Unfortunately, acceleration in asking rent growth points to an acceleration in the average rent growth measures in the ABS's CPI data, which comes out later." Now, of course, the other day I did highlight that we have a significant problem with regards particularly to rental stress in Australia. And whilst everybody seems to be focusing on the mortgage situation, and with mortgage rates under question now because of higher rates from the RBA, and of course the fact that fixed rates are already a lot higher simply because of the fact we've got interest rates expected now to go higher, and fixed rates are a reflection of future rates. The real story, as always, is in the rental sector. And you will, of course, if you saw the show, see this chart. Rental stress at 75.7% of those in the rental market. Now, these are cash flow measures. So what it says is that 3/4 of people in the rental sector are having cash flow pressures, and that's comparing with 50% in the mortgage sector. So as I keep saying, it's the rental sector which is very much part of the problem. But the fascinating thing is not only are the renters themselves in difficulty, but more and more property investors are also now being caught. And there's a couple of angles to this. The first is the APRA data. This is the quarterly data just out, showed that in fact the investment loan share has grown over the last year, this is to December 2025, to 30.8%. And it's also worth highlighting that the proportion of loans with a loan-to-value ratio overall above 80% is down slightly. And the past due and non-performing loans are down just a little. But The really interesting observation is that the new investment loans funded by share rose to 35.9%. And it's also worth noting that there was a rise in new loans with an LVR above 80%, up from 31 to 32.2%, that new loans with a debt-to-income ratio of greater than 6 moved from 5.8 to 6.8%, and new owner-occupied loans with debt-to-income ratio of 6 or greater was 4%, but new investment loans with a debt-to-income ratio of greater or equal to 6 funded was 11.3%. Now, of course, APRA is beginning to clamp down now on some of the more aggressive lending, particularly in the investment sector. And as Cameron Kushner highlighted, the effect of the Home Guarantee Scheme may not be huge, but it does show that the latest ADI property exposures reveals that the home occupier lending with an LVR of 95% or more rose from 2.8% of all new lending to a record high of 4%. So yes, the government intervention is impacting the owner-occupier sector, and we have more home loans at high loan-to-value ratio for first-time buyers. That's a problem. But another problem, as highlighted recently in the Financial Review, is that the interventions from APRA are very much having a chilling effect on property investors. As they headlined, this may about to be the end of an era of the 10-plus property portfolio. And they go on to highlight that there had been, was popularized by Spruikers on social media and on podcasts, the strategy involves purchasing properties through trusts or companies to boost borrowing capacity by bypassing serviceability limits. The theory is that because the loan for a particular property is quarantined inside a trust, lenders won't look at an investor's overall debt-to-income position when assessing subsequent applications. But they say the loophole is quickly closing under the weight of scrutiny by APRA, which is targeting pockets of high risk in the mortgage market. And now the major banks have started to pull back from this type of lending, with non-bank lending following suit. And as Ben Kinsley, the chair of the Property Investors Council of Australia, said, it's basically a Ponzi scheme. Mortgage brokers, real estate agents and buyer's agents have been spruiking the strategy because they make money on each transaction. But the problem is diminishing, but still urges the regulators to do more. And that's the point, really. So property investors that are perhaps professional property investors or near professional property investors are now being under the spotlight. But the truth is that even ordinary property investors, even mum and dad investors, as I see in my surveys, are actually seeing the returns on their property investments not really doing what they would want. Now, of course, there are two ways of thinking about investment returns. The first is the gross rental yield, which is the comparison of the price of the property versus the theoretical rental return that you might get if it was fully rented. That is the one that all the agents quote, of course, because it always sounds good. Although in practice, as we will see, there's another side, and that is the net investment yield. Now, net investment yield is looking at the real returns once you take into account mortgage repayments, management fees, maintenance fees, and the other costs of the investment property. And the truth is that we have more and more property investors who are underwater from a cash flow perspective. Now, if you have the prospect of really strong property growth into the future, capital appreciation, you might still wear the losses because, of course, you can offset them against tax in some circumstances. But if it is now true that property growth is easing in some areas, well, that may be a rather different question. Now, to try and get at that, in our surveys, we do go into quite a lot of detail with regard to the property story. And it's pretty important at the moment, as I highlighted the other day, if you look at the latest data from the ABS, it showed that the total value of residential dwellings was $12.3 trillion, up again in the quarter. And we've got more than 11.4 million properties there, of which, of course, a proportion are investment properties. But when you actually look closely at the data here, and we do in our surveys, what we're finding now are there's some quite interesting trends coming out. And that's really what I want to highlight now in this part of the conversation. So from my surveys, I do actually calculate both the gross and net investment yield by postcode. And there's some really interesting and actually quite worrying sets of data coming out of this now. So let me just share some of the latest analysis and let's try and understand what this really means, looking at it specifically from an investment perspective. Here, we've listed the highest gross yield postcodes based on my surveys. And it's interesting that the Northern Territories is right at the top of the list there. You can see them all listed. Although the investor counts are quite low in a lot of areas, and so there's always a question of statistical relevance, bearing in mind I've got a 1% sample. And you can see also that Western Australia and then South Australia is down the bottom of the list there. And we're seeing we're getting highest gross yields of 6.7 to 6.6%, coming down through the fives, and the South Australian Freeling postcode 5372 still has a gross yield of 5.1%. But I will highlight that the net yield, net investment yield, is actually quite a lot lower. And in fact, in some cases, is negative. Not seriously so, but it does show you that just looking at gross investment yield doesn't tell the full story. And we can look at it another way. This is the lowest gross yields. And you can see there that Victoria is featured strongly with postcode 3698 and 3575 at the top of the list. And as we go down the list, we can see some New South Wales postcodes too. But Victoria is a significant problem. And places like Pakenham, for example, is an example of a postcode with quite a few investors and a net investment yield of minus 1.5%. And those minus figures are, you know, somewhere between minus 1.3, slightly positive maybe, but actually, yeah, it does vary. Remember, we're looking here at gross investment yield, so the net yield swings around the place. But if we then turn to the highest net yield, reminding you that this is actually the real cash flow return of an investment property, well, WA is doing quite well. And there's a couple of places in Victoria, like Jameson, for example, that's not doing too badly as well. But I'm highlighting the fact that Queensland is not doing too badly, around 2.4%. But we're coming into the twos as we get down the list. And remember, these are the highest net yields. And so there are places in Queensland with a two in front of it, which surprises quite a few people when I speak to them about it, because everybody assumes that returns in Queensland are doing well. Not necessarily that well. And if we look at the lowest net yields, then again, we see that it's Victoria and New South Wales and South Australia. There's a few places there with very significant net yield losses. Backers Marsh in Victoria is showing a minus 7.9% return. Bridgewater in South Australia, a minus 7.5% return. And Eagle Hawk in Victoria, minus 6.2%. And as you get down the list, up in Queensland, like Bellwood Park, minus 4.7%. Or Kinkin, postcode 4571, at minus 4.6%. And Thirlmere in New South Wales, 2572, minus 4.6%. So you can see quite significant ranges, but these net investment yields, bearing in mind that they're annual yields based on the calculations, suggest that things are not well. Now, there's another way of looking at this same data set, and that is looking at the mapping that we have here. This is the gross investment yield story. And you can see here that the blues are the lowest through yellows through to the oranges and the reds. So anything above 5% is actually showing out as red. And you can see here that in and around the centre of Sydney, we're sitting at somewhere around 3 to 3.5%. And as we pull out, we can see that there are areas like Vaucluse, which is down a little bit. Remember, we're looking at gross investment yields here. And as we pull out, we can see that mostly across New South Wales, we are in this sort of mid-threes range. There are a 2.5 and below at postcode 2175, for example. And as we pull out, Penrith 2748 is also showing a bit of a fall. Wollongong is not doing so well. You can see that there are a few other ones too. So this shows you that across New South Wales, property investment, gross investment yields are not that flash. If we look at Brisbane, and you can see there that the returns are a bit higher in and around the centre of Brisbane, above 5% or 4.5 to 5%. As we pull out again, we can see that the returns are a little lower in some other areas, typically in the threes. Remember, I'm looking at gross investment yield here. And as we pull out further, we can see that there are areas further out, like 4110 and 4117, down towards Logan. But generally, the returns in and around the Queensland area are in the threes, significantly down, by the way, from what we saw a few years ago. If we then go to Victoria and do the same trick, starting in the centre of Victoria, Melbourne, postcode 3000, and pulling out, we start to see some rather lower returns. And in fact, Melbourne and Greater Melbourne has some of the lowest investment returns in the country at the moment. And you can see that as we go out, there are areas where the blues are showing up, postcode 3091, 3133, for example, a lot of the postcodes to and beyond Wyndham, and further out as well. So generally, returns in Melbourne are low. And that's partly because of the land tax and some of the other things that have been imposed on property investors in the Melbourne area. Remember, I'm looking at gross investment yield, so this is not necessarily looking at the real costs, which we will come to shortly. And finally, let's look at Perth for comparisons. And you can see here that in Perth, yeah, the returns are somewhat higher. You can see here that we're in the 6007 and 6050, West Leederville, Mount Lawley, where you've got 5% plus. And pulling out, you can see again, somewhat similar story, with areas not doing so badly from a gross investment yield perspective. But as I keep highlighting, gross investment yield is only half the story. What we really want to do now is to look at net investment yield. So let's look at net investment yield. And again, this is showing the range of investment yields. The code this time is the more red, the lower the investment yield. And if we go towards the lighter colours and blue, then we are beginning to move above zero. In other words, positive returns from a net investment yield perspective. Remember, the net investment yield is the true cash flow based return of the investment property. So in and around Sydney, yeah, there are areas, Vaucluse, where in fact people are getting returns. But across most of Sydney, when you do the calculations and take account of all the costs of the investment property, guess what? There are many areas where in fact we are quite deeply underwater from a cash flow perspective. And I find that when I talk to property investors, many of them just have no idea, because they don't calculate the net investment yield, which is a bit of a problem, because what it tells you is you could probably do a lot better not investing in property, but investing in, for example, term deposits, where it's simpler managed as well, by the way. Melbourne has a similar story here, And you can see here that the returns are pretty negative. There are a few closer to zero, but as you move out, like Yarraville, for example, and 3012, and other areas too, Glen Ira, for example, we can see that there are deep red stains across Melbourne. And this is the story of property investment in the Melbourne context. Most people are losing money hand over fist at the moment. And that's one of the reasons why we have higher numbers of property investments coming on the market for listing at the moment. If we go to Brisbane, from a net investment yield perspective, yes, there are more with positive returns, particularly in and around the centre of Brisbane. Although as we pull out, I have to say that there are areas looking quite deeply negative, 4051, for example, and a few others too. Remember, we're looking here at percentages, so the amount of returns that people are getting. And so if you were thinking of comparing Queensland, particularly around Brisbane, with Melbourne or Sydney, then yes, from a net investment yield perspective, Brisbane is somewhat better. But as you pull out, you can see that there are quite a few areas that are also deeply negative as well. 4340, for example, stands out. And then if I go to Perth, well, even in Western Australia, despite those higher growth investment yields that are highlighted, there are a number where the real true returns from a net investment perspective are deeply negative. And as you pull out, you can see that that story continues, particularly in some of the more expensive areas. But places like Swan is also quite badly pit, Stirling as well. And as we move to the north and the south of Perth, not all places are the same, but there are quite a few that are negative in net investment yield terms. Which takes me to sort of the conclusion of this particular part of the story. Property investors quite often have this over rosy picture of their investment portfolio. Now, the lender, and under APRA's guidance, the regulator is looking deeply at the leverage position of property investors. And property investors are beginning to now ask the question, well, am I actually making any returns on this investment property, particularly if I take into account the real costs? Now, of course, you can offset it against tax, at least at the moment. But will that change in the budget? Who knows? If it does, that could be another shock to the system. And in the meantime, of course, what this means in practice is we have renters struggling to pay the rents. We have property investors struggling to get returns from their property investment. And they are perhaps trying to put the rents up, but they're finding that the renters can't afford to pay more, because actually rents are more connected with income growth rather than property prices. Whereas property investors are looking at it from a property price perspective. So it shows you that we have really started now to hit the buffers here, when both property investors and renters are both caught in the same tsunami. This is one to watch, because I think that this is going to play out quite badly with higher interest rates and with still strong migration, high demand, little supply, high interest rates, and now government intervention to try and turn down the high leverage investment properties. This is looking like a traffic accident in slow motion, gonna happen. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot
Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.